I'm Drew from Spork, and normally I'm not allowed to speak to the public, but I finished all my rejections today, and Richard said I could actually do the introduction. The reason you've got us here and Amelia here is because there was a scheduling confusion incident in that we had an event going on down the street.
That was me at the Casa Libre and Sonora Review benefit at Club Congress at the end of April. We had our own event scheduled for the same night, but in the interest of harmony, we decided to cancel and have Amelia Gray do her not poetry at the Is Poetry event. While I had her in town, I sat her down and made her read in public places. Made her read to me and no one else, and I recorded while she read. A couple of the locations were better only as ideas, and so I made her read the stories over and over, dragging her from a bar to a patio, then to another bar, then into the lobby at the hotel, until I finally got what I wanted. Or what I hoped was actually what I wanted. I couldn't tell through the headphones and the noise. I wouldn't know until I got it into the editor. Amelia's on tour with her book AMPM, out on Featherproof Books. And while I did record her reading from the book, what I'm giving you today is Amelia reading, in various locations around downtown Tucson, two stories published by Spork. The first is Cube, originally published at sporkpress.com on April 27th. The second story, Code of Operations, Snake Farm, went up during our early incarnation on... Hey, funny thing here. Our site's down. Get to the host and... The control panel's gone. Hang on.
The number you dialed is temporarily not in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please try your call again.
Their 800 number is gone. Crap. Like I said, I had Amelia read to me on the patio.
It would be too large for the
but that didn't
bed
work out
an 18
so well.
Wheeler, and even then, there were no tire marks in the area. No damaged vegetation, and not even a road nearby wide enough for a load that size. It was as if the block had been cast in its spot and destined to remain.
And then again...
A rattan desk chair. A mattress made of NASA foam. They even agreed on alternate theories. Everything that sunk could rise again, for example. One of the men splashed...
But we got it right eventually.
Cube. The children who found the cube shrieked over it as children do. The adults couldn't be pulled away from the picnic at first and assumed that the children had found a shedded snake skin or a gopher hole. Only when the Rogers kid touched the iron cube and burned his hand did the parents come running, attracted by the screams. It was a massive monolith, wider than it was tall and taller than anyone could reach, wavering like an oasis in the heat. The Rogers kid wept bitterly, his hand already swelling with a blister. Nobody knew what to make of the thing. It was too big to have been carted in on a pickup truck. It would be too large for the open bed of an 18-wheeler, and even then there were no tire marks in the area. No damaged vegetation, and not even a road nearby wide enough for a load that size. It was as if the block had been cast in its spot and destined to remain. And then there was the issue of the inscription. They didn't notice it at first, between the screaming Rogers kid, his mother's wailing panic to hustle him back to the camp for ice, and the pandemonium of parents finding their own children and clasping them to their chests and lifting them up at once. The object in question itself received little scrutiny. Only when the mothers walked their children back to camp for calamine lotion and jelly beans did the rest of the adults notice the printed text, sized no larger than half inch, on the shady side of the block. Everything must, eventually sink. The words caused an uncomfortable stir among the gathered crowd. "What about Noah's Ark?" asked one man in the silence. "After the flood," another said, "the Ark was lost in the sand." "What about buoys?" "Given time and water retention," said a woman who worked in a laboratory, "a buoy will sink like the rest." This was disconcerting news. Everyone stood around a while, thinking. "What about an indestructible balloon? Such a contraption does not exist, and is therefore not a thing. A floating bird, such as a swan?" "It will die and then sink," the first man said, annoyed. One man made to rest against the iron cube and stepped back, grimacing in pain at the surface heat. "A glass bubble, then," he said. The laboratory woman shook her head. "The glass would eventually erode, as would polymer, plastic, wood, and ceramic. We're talking thousands of years, but of course it would happen." The group was becoming visibly nervous. One young man recalled a flood in his hometown that brought all the watertight caskets bobbing out of the earth, rising triumphantly out of the water like breaching whales. The water eventually found its way through the leak-proof seals, and the caskets sank again. Another man recalled a mother from the city who drove her car into a pond, her children still strapped to their seats. A man and a woman walked to camp and returned shortly with a cooler of beer. The gathered crowd commenced to drinking, forming a half circle around the cube. They agreed that many things would eventually sink: a credit card, a potato peeled, a baby stroller, a canoe, a pickle jar full of helium, a rattan desk chair, a mattress made of NASA foam. They even agreed on alternate theories. Everything that sunk could rise again, for example. One of the men splashed a few ounces of beer on the iron surface as a gesture of respect. The place where the beer touched cooled down, and the man leaned on the cube. It didn't budge. The men and women grew drunk, and their claims more grandiose: a skyscraper, an orchard, a city of mermaids. Eventually, the mothers came back to lead them to camp, but they didn't want to go, eliciting words from the mothers who had been stuck with the children and one another all afternoon and were ready for the silence of their respective cars. Back at camp, they were throwing leftover food into the pond. Ducks paddled up to eat the breadcrumbs and slices of meat, and the children clapped their hands. The Rogers kid stayed on his mother's lap, picking jelly beans from her lap. A pair of siblings threw an entire loaf of bread into the water and watched it disappear. The mothers didn't talk much, preoccupied with children or ducks. As they sat, some thought about the children, and some thought about everything eventually sinking, but most thought of the long drive ahead, the end of the weekend, and the days after that.
Okay, the site's back up. I'm doing a full backup of everything now. Most of our site's generated dynamically on the server now, so I don't actually have an uploadable backup, which seems a little stupid to me now. Code of Operations Snake Farm was published almost 3 years ago at sporkpress.com. The initial recording didn't go quite as well.
Create a snake farm that will really... I have to start over. I got all fussed up. Okay. It's not too bad.
I'm going to actually...
It's down and I get super...
Yeah, I've been...
Confused.
That recently too.
Yeah. It's terrible. Okay, that's much better. That'll work.
Given it 5 minutes.
All right.
Or, you know, until I feel like, okay, thanks.
Yeah,
sorry.
Fine, we'll do.
But we did eventually get it without having to change venue.
Code of Operation, Snake Farm. The thing is that everyone is jealous, and I hate to say it, but everyone is jealous because I am finally creating a snake farm, which has been my lifelong dream, and I spent a very long time in the world saving up for this dream to become a reality, as they say on the television, for this dream to become a reality. And at each of the jobs, gas station, collision repair, hardware store, I pinched the pennies and thought about how to create a snake farm that will really appeal to the masses. And I came up with a plan and detailed it in a notebook because I have always been told that I have fine organizational skills. The plan is as follows. Safety first. The goal of the snake farm is not only to make lots of cash, but to show the public once and for all that snakes are not frightening, they may not even be deadly, but they are safe and often friendly. It is therefore important that the snakes who are a danger to the community be placed under wire mesh cages, and that only trained professionals such as myself will handle the snakes. In the occasion that a garter or green snake seems interested in being touched, children may hold and touch the snakes. Pythons will be touched, but not while digesting, because disturbing the lunch of a snake is cruel. Care and comfort. It should be known that snakes are not used to the good life. They are used to being compared with evil, being that they have no legs, being that they tempted that woman, being that they do have the ability to defend themselves. If visitors only realize that many of us have the ability to defend ourselves, but that we do not advertise this ability with fangs, they could understand how close we are to snakes. In the meantime, the habitat of the snakes will be improved with soft dirt, places to shed scales, dark places, fresh food, living, and other surprises that even the snakes could not foresee. Visiting hours. The snakes do not live in a hospital and should therefore not be confined to the hours that a nameless, faceless entity has chosen for them. Obviously, the snakes cannot talk, but their disposition on any given day will determine the snake farm hours of operation. If, for example, the snakes are coiled around a tree, the hours will be shortened. If the snakes seem interested in visiting by displaying tendencies, sunning themselves on rocks, showing healthy appetite, hours will be extended until the snakes are tired of this treatment. The hours of operation will be determined daily via a majority vote among the snakes. Owner tours. As the proprietor of the snake farm and owner of the land, the snakes, the cages, the information kiosk, and the refreshment stand, I will personally give special behind-the-scenes tours to all willing to pay a slightly accelerated fee. Visitors paying this fee will have the pleasure of seeing 1. The holding pens and preparation for feeding time, 2. The process of preserving sheddings, and 3. The owner's office, which contains many plans for future expanding, including a small coaster slide for children, coasters being the obvious choice as they are snake-shaped, and children riding along them will understand the serpentine quality of many things. Suggested dress. All visitors to the snake farm will be advised to come prepared with the proper clothing, which will be long pants for the men and children, shoes with closed toes, shirts untucked, important in case of accidental snake release. Long dresses for the ladies to make it difficult for the snakes to cling in case of accidental release. Ladies will be advised to wear a floral print in soft colors to soothe and comfort the snakes. Fellow visitors and employees of the snake farm may be soothed and comforted incidentally, but the snakes in this and all situations are the number one priority. Research projects. The snake farm will become a center of research for the county, drawing students from public schools as well as scholars from the local farm and community colleges. Because of the potential for research on interesting and unusual snakes, there will be a special day set aside for these students to observe and experiment. Of course, the snakes will be cared for, and at any sign of distress, the experiment will be over and the snake farm will go into lockdown. To avoid contamination and maintain a professional atmosphere, lab coats will be provided. Feeding time. Digestion time is a special personal time for snakes, but one of the most fascinating times to observe a snake is during feeding time, directly prior. It should be known that many snakes actually enjoy putting on a show for an audience during this time, much to the dismay of the animal, which will be consumed, but as a capitalistic venture and as a favor to the snakes, feeding time will be announced and may be observed at the visitor's discretion. It will be advised that children observe because, contrary to popular belief, the mind of a child can take in much more horror than that of an adult, that it can be a detriment, in fact, to deprive a child of the facts of life, as they say on television, the facts of life. What to expect? Visitors to the snake farm will see snakes in great number and variation. They will see milk snakes and ball pythons and garter snakes and vipers and rattlesnakes and king snakes and adder snakes and diamondback snakes and tiger snakes, corn snakes, cottonmouth snakes, asp snakes, and rat snakes. Many inferior snake farms try to keep and show other animals, such as turtles, alligators, bats, and baboons, but I, as owner and proprietor of this snake farm, will insist that there only be snakes. There will be only snakes.
Another Spork Press podcast, this one featuring Amelia Gray. You can find her at ameliagray.com. That's G-R-A-Y, not G-R-E-Y. The distinction is very important. And you can find us at sporkpress.com. And that's about it for us this time. No music this time, just the words.